Hey, how you doing? We're going to be talking here today about AOL Instant Messenger.
AOL Instant Messenger, you know, despite the forced nostalgia that's been popular in recent years, which I think is actually less popular, I'm seeing less of that forced constant nostalgia because I think the beast has sort of swallowed its own tail and there's not enough to be nostalgic about right now. So I feel like there's been a little less emphasis on all that stuff. But one thing that I've surprisingly seen little nostalgia for is AOL Instant Messenger. And maybe because that sort of service is still a huge part of what we do. I mean, basically text messaging has become that. Things like Facebook Messenger. There's so many ways that we message each other through text that, you know, AOL Instant Messenger or the idea behind it certainly hasn't died. But there was something very unique about that particular service and also that particular time, using that service in that particular time. And that time period would be late 90s, early 2000s, because a lot of people, a lot of families, the first internet they had was AOL. And AOL had a built-in messenger. AOL Instant Messenger was built into that, but it wasn't the AIM service that you could download. And I feel like such a fucking dork saying service. It wasn't the service. But AOL Instant Messenger was built into AOL, and you could get into the chat rooms. Chat rooms were kind of the big thing that people talked about in the mainstream, in the media, you know, just people who didn't really know about the mechanics of that early internet would always be like, did you meet them in a chat room? Are you going into those chat rooms? Because chat rooms were huge on AOL. There were tons of standalone chat rooms you could go to, website. There were entire websites that were just a chat room, which were really fucking weird. Because my first experience with the internet was actually going into a chat room. We had these neighbors who worked for an educational software company. I think they moved in when I was around in third grade. Just like, they seemed very old to me at the time, but they were probably in their mid-20s to like early 30s. And the guy, Franz, he was from Germany, had an accent and everything, but he was a self-taught software developer, and they were the first people I ever met that had the internet, and our family became friends with them, and we went over there for dinner, and he set me down, and it was the perfect setting because it was upstairs in this sort of loft area, very private, kind of like almost like an attic, more of like an attic type space, very dark, with just like, it was just big enough to basically fit a desk with a computer on it. And so he set me up on AOL with his account, and like, it was like, just check this out. You can do this. You know, I can't possibly do a German accent. Just imagine a thick German accent, and probably thicker than it actually was. Imagine just the thickest, most Germanic voice you can imagine. But he showed me chat rooms, and he set me up in one. And I remember it was the strangest thing, because people were in this AOL chat room, and I have to imagine they all seemed to be adults. It wasn't like a kid's corner, because there were like these AOL chat rooms you could go into, and some of them were like for kids. And all those noises kind of give me like this weird sort of like haunting feeling. All those, like the sound of, because there were these certain sounds that like if someone typed something into the chat room, it would make this sound on the computer, and it just kind of, it's haunting in retrospect. But anyway, this was like an adult chat room, and by adult, I don't mean like smutty. I just mean it was adults sitting there, and I remember they were pretending to be in a hot tub. It was this group of adults like saying like, ooh, like I'm sitting in front of a jet. I'm sitting in front of a jet right now. You know, someone like fucking typed that in there, these lonely adults, and I was just like observing, man. I was just like, holy shit, and their screen names were fascinating to me. And that was my first experience. It's interesting to remember that because you think about how revolutionary the internet was. And that was my first experience on the internet, was seeing adults pretending to be in a fucking hot tub and talking about like, I'm sitting in front of a jet. after that, I told my mom, I was like, I need to like have that. And it took us a couple years before we finally got it. We got AOL, but we had AOL, and you could get onto the AOL service and go into chat rooms and email. You could email people, but you couldn't, our internet was so slow that you couldn't access actual internet. Like you couldn't go to like .com pages. You could only go to like internal like AOL pages and stuff like that. So we had that for a while. And it's a funny story with that German guy, because he, of course, helped us set up the internet in our house, set up AOL, and he was helping me set up my first screen name, and he was like, at the time, I had just started playing youth football, so this would have been about 1995 or 96, I think probably 96, yeah, 96. Yeah, 96. And he was like, well, what's your position? Like, I couldn't, I mean, you asked like a kid, like this new technology, like, what do you want your screen name to be? That's a lot of fucking pressure. What do you want your tattoo to be? You ask a 10-year-old, like, what do you want tattooed on your forehead? But he asked me, and I couldn't think of anything. And he's like, well, what position do you play in football? Which is not a German accent, but... And I remember I was like, I'm a lineman. And he was like, he kind of like made like a puzzled face because he didn't know anything about American football. And he was like, well, what does that do? Like, what do you do as a lineman? And I was like, I block. And he's like, well, okay, how about blocker? And I was like, okay. I mean, I was very open to suggestion when it came to deciding on a screen name. And then he was like, what's your astrological sign? And they were like these computer people, these neighbors, but they were also, they changed my family's life in many ways, not just gave us the internet, but they were part of like what's called the Wilderness Awareness School, which my sister became involved in through them. And she met like her future fiance, who she didn't marry, but it was her fiance. Like my sister got heavily involved and it was all through them. So they introduced us to this really like hands-on nature world. This organization, and it changed everybody in my family's lives. And then they introduced us to the internet. So it's interesting to think about this couple, Franz and Robin, because they introduce us to both ends of the earthly and unearthly spectrum in terms of technology, the most advanced technology that a human could access at that point, at least the average citizen, and then this like hands-on earthy Wilderness Awareness School that was like hippie as fuck. So interesting dynamic there, just as a side note. But anyway, to get back to the choosing of my screen name, he's like, okay, you're in football, you're a blocker. And I was like, sure. And then he was like, what's your astrological sign? And like, I couldn't remember. My mom was into that shit, but I could not remember. So I was just like, I think Leo. Because my mom was always, I'm a Capricorn, but my mom's always like, but your rising sign's a Leo, so it means this and this. And so I just said Leo instinctively because I didn't know. At 10 years old or 9 years old, however old I wasn't keeping track of my astrological sign. I wasn't reading my horoscope daily like I do today. And so my first screen name was Blocker Leo, which is fucking obtuse, to say the least. That's very catchy, Blocker Leo. And so that was my screen name for a few years. And then like once I figured out how to make other screen names, I of course made a million of them. But up until that point, it was just AOL was this very simple thing. Sometimes I'd get on, like if I had a friend over whose family didn't have the internet or something, we'd like pop into a chat room and fuck with people, whatever, or just observe it. Sometimes talk to random strangers, you know, update my AOL profile because you could search AOL profiles and there were like these different like categories like interests, hobbies, personal quote. I don't remember all that it said, but anyway, to get back to my original point, AOL Instant Messenger. So some people had AOL, but like I don't remember any kids, you know, by the time I got into like seventh grade, you know, more people were starting to get the internet, and my family, I think it was toward the end of seventh grade that we actually were able to access like .com internet, like something outside of the standard AOL world. And around that time is also when people started like sharing screen names, like the kids who had AOL were in junior high and, you know, so things were changing socially. And so the kids who had that started to exchange screen names. And I remember starting to talk to some friends and through that, but it hadn't really taken off. It definitely wasn't the standard when I was in seventh, eighth grade. I think eighth grade is when I remember things kind of turning, where more and more kids were starting to talk through AOL. And I don't know when AOL developed the standalone instant messenger, the AIM, AIM, where anybody could download it. You didn't have to have the AOL internet provider, but anybody could download AOL Instant Messenger for free. And that was when that kind of made its rounds. And you think about that spreading, that was this completely just organic thing. You know, there was no advertising campaign. That was just kids telling other kids, like, hey, you can download this thing and type to me. And type to me. We can talk at night. You know, you can talk to all your friends on this thing. And, like, nobody had cell phones, so nobody was text messaging. Text messaging was several years off. It seems like it was much farther off than it was. Thinking about, like, let's say eighth grade, when kids really started to, like, download Instant Messenger. But not really until ninth grade. I remember ninth grade, I think things, the tipping point kind of tipped, and a lot of people had it. And then by high school, everyone did. Anyway, what was I saying? In eighth grade, let's say that, you know, just some people had it, but that would have spread totally organically. Like, there was no way to just find that out on your own, unless you were either a nerd who used the internet a lot and therefore would know about AOL Instant Messenger, or you just heard it through word of mouth. But kids who weren't nerds at all were getting that and chatting. And why I wanted to talk about AOL Instant Messenger is, what's amazing about it is that it was such a private platform. It was you directly talking to somebody, because people didn't really use, I'm trying to remember if you could go, you couldn't go into the AOL chat rooms, like the designated AOL chat rooms, using AIM. I don't think you could, at least, but I think you could set up, like, chat rooms, and it might have had its own form of chat rooms, but that wasn't really that popular with the standalone AOL Instant Messenger. It was much more just private talk. And I think about, you know, going on there, for me, definitely every day, every night. I know I've mentioned this before, but I still remember these two friends. I was hanging out with two friends. One of them was this guy who's now, like, a well-known musician, but he was deep. Like, I heard, he's the first person who ever told me about Google. He told me about so many things. Like, he was really into video games and anime, and just a really sharp guy, and also just way ahead of everybody when it came to the internet. My friend Robin, and he was talking about, like, checking his email every day or something, and this other friend who was kind of a jock was like, you check your email every day? Because in Kirkland, you know, everyone has a New York accent. I've actually lost my accent. But this other friend was like, you check your email every day? And the guy, you know, was like, yeah. Or no, that wasn't it. What it was, sorry, this is for such a stupid little story, I have to get it right. Course, he talked about using the internet every day, and that other friend was like, you use the internet every day? And he was like, he got kind of, like, nervous and bashful about it. He was like, to check my email, you know, because it was at that point in time, like, using the internet too much was considered horrible. You were like, not just a nerd, but it was considered, like, sick. You know, it was like there was, like, something mentally wrong with you if you used the internet too much. And when you think about, like, humans as animals, that's kind of interesting, because it's almost like we're so afraid of everything that's new. We're afraid of new ideas, and the internet was not only a new idea, but it was a new technology, and there was so much fear in the media about it, fear among families, fear about children using it, young people using it. It was really considered this dark place. So it was just, I just remember this accusational tone about this friend using the internet every day and him trying to, like, explain himself. And then lo and behold, like, I don't know, 10 years later, 15 years later, it's like the internet is practically a part of your body. You carry a device with you that has constant access to it, and the internet is giving you notifications. When you leave a fucking building that you've been in for more than 5 minutes, it says, how would you rate such and such? I was having a phone conversation a couple days ago, and I was in front of this bookstore, and I did not go inside the bookstore, but I was right out in front of it, pacing back and forth as I do, talking. And I don't know, I was probably in front of that bookstore for maybe 20 minutes of, like, a 2-hour phone call. And after I hung up, it was like, and I walked away, it said, how would you rate? And then it said the name of the bookstore, because it believed that I had been in the bookstore. So we go from this, like, fear of, like, how could you check the internet every day, where you had to dial up and, like, really, you had to make an effort to use it, to now we're at this point where, you know, even if you try your best to completely disconnect yourself, you're still a part of it. Even if you don't have, you know, it's like it's almost impossible to not somehow be influenced by the internet, not just daily, but constantly. Even if you're one of these people who takes a stand against it, doesn't have like internet-related apps on your phone, doesn't even have a smartphone, it's still all around you. You're still a part of it, whether you want to be or not. What was I talking about? Well, AOL Instant Messenger. So it spread organically, and by 9th grade, 10th grade, everybody had it. And the privacy of it—that's what I was going to talk about—is how you were having these one-on-one conversations in most cases with a lot of people, with your good friends, but also some people who were kind of acquaintances from school. You weren't just talking to your closest friends, and a lot of times people would message you, and they would just kind of say, "Hey, what's up? How's it going?" And nobody does that anymore. Like, I mean, do people do that through text message? Like, I don't. Like, I have good friends who I'll check in with if we haven't talked to each other in a while. I mean, I know that with my truly good friends, like, we don't go like, "Hey, how have you been?" You know, we just, even if we don't talk for months, like that time that we do talk, we just launch into something crazy. But with AOL Instant Messenger, it was like this thing where you were getting on nightly. There was a certain crowd. That's the funny thing, too, is there were a lot of kids that had it, but there were those of us who were on it fucking every night. That got to be more and more people with time. But I definitely remember this early sort of crowd. And it wasn't like I had everybody from my school on my buddy list. And you could customize the name of your buddy list on AOL Instant Messenger. God knows what mine was called. I tried so hard to be weird, even with my own personal shit, that it was probably like the name of my list was probably just like science or something like that. You know, I think it was. I honestly think it was. and I remember too, because at that point my family had AOL, the service, and so I had a screen name on there, but I had a separate screen name I would log in with on AOL Instant Messenger because I liked it more. And so I would be online with these two different screen names, and like not doing anything bad with that. I wasn't like fucking with people, at least not most of the time. But I was definitely on with two screen names, just funny. You go from Blocker Leo to Mutate, and the cells of Blocker Leo mutated into this and that. So you'd be having these private conversations, and that really stands out to me because it's like, what did we talk about? What was there to talk about? You know, there'd be some humor, like some of my good friends or even people who are acquaintances who I just had a good humor rapport with. We'd be going back and forth. And I was, you know, I used message boards and I met friends through there. I even still have some people that I consider good friends that I'm still connected with, that I still talk to regularly, who I've never met in person, but I met as a teenager on just random places on the internet. That's the true power of it is, at the time, you seemed like a big fucking nerd or a loser. And I mean, I guess fortunately I had real life friends. Like I wasn't relying on the internet for my only friends in the world. Not that there's anything wrong with that, if that's where you got to go. But what was interesting about it was just that, you know, I had this, like, I had some friends I had made online, and then I had these friends from real life, and then I would be talking to them both. It was really like this split dimension. Because I met some genuinely interesting people who changed my life in some ways, you know, or a lot of ways. You know, I think about, I could go into that another time. I mean, really, it's for another time. I could go deep on that. But so you'd be talking to these different types of people, and, you know, some from your school, some random other people. But it was mostly people in my age range. There were some people who were slightly older that I'd met, like, through the internet, who were interesting people and things like that. But I remember being at dinner once. It was a family on family dinner. It was like my mom and I were at dinner with like a friend and his family, which is a weird fucking setup. Like, I'm uncomfortable at any dinner table. Like, I don't like to sit at a table and eat with people, and that's why I know I'm a fucking freak, because it's like everything's all about you don't eat alone. He who eats alone dies alone. And it does out you as a freak of some kind when you don't like to eat with people. I mean, just before I go into the story about this dinner party, whatever, dinner party, I don't know if it was a dinner party. Two families going out to eat together is weird to me. Even today, especially today. Because, like, I grew up and I had a single mom, and it would be like dinner was me sitting on the couch either reading or watching TV while I ate, and my mom would be doing a crossword puzzle in her chair with maybe like Jeopardy or Nick at Night on in the background. And that was dinner. And, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, family needs to sit at the table and eat and talk. And it's like, we talked and stuff. And I look back very, you know, I have a lot of nostalgia for that time growing up with my mom and like us just sitting there chilling, not sitting at a table. I think that was really valuable to me. And I learned so much from Nick at Night and Jeopardy. You know, it was a valuable time. It was education. It was good dinner time. But anyway, so like the idea of sitting at a table is just weird, but going out to dinner, and I remember we were talking about like AOL or something at this dinner thing, and my friend's mom was like, yeah, you know, every time I go into his room, or every time I go into the, because you didn't have your own computer, you had like a computer room, your family had a computer. That was the other thing that was weird about those days of like junior high and early high school AOL and Instant Messenger is that no kids had their own computers. Nobody had laptops. Nobody. I don't know anybody. The only people who I knew who had laptops were people who like worked for computer software companies, like the German guy. But no families had laptops. They had a desktop computer that the entire family shared. And so when you think about talking to these kids at night, all these kids are sitting at their family computer. And sometimes the family computer was in awkward places. You know, forward-thinking families had a computer room or an office where they kept their desktop computer, their big, bulky, no flat screens. It was like this big fucking thing. And then, you know, some people, though, just had their computer, their family computer in the living room. So some kids were sitting there chatting with their friends in the living room while their family was around, which is weird. Because, like, even to this day, it doesn't matter what I'm doing on a computer. But if someone is behind me while I'm using a computer, like, I get fucking upset. It doesn't even matter what I'm doing. I don't even look at fucking porn. Like, it doesn't matter, you know? It doesn't matter what I'm doing. But just the idea that someone can see into that, like, other dimension that I'm, like, focused on is upsetting. I also like to sit with my back to the wall in restaurants. But anyway, sitting there, like my friend's mom at this awkward family dinner was like, you know, I see him on there, and, you know, sometimes I'll go in there and the entire screen is just those little windows. She was talking about those AOL Instant Messenger windows. So his entire screen was filled up with windows of conversations he's having. She's like, I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know what he's talking about, and I don't know what he's talking about with all them little windows, which is a weird thing for a parent who probably grew up, you know, my mom was born in 1948. She didn't really pay much mind to what I was doing on there. She just trusted that I wasn't doing anything too bad, although I do remember like a horrible moment when she took some sort of computer class. I mean, she to this day isn't very good, not very good with computers, and but she was like taking some sort of like college at the Votech, or she was taking some sort of class that like gave basic computer knowledge, and they basically were teaching like adults how to use the internet. And I remember like that they would like give them these printed instructions of how to do certain things. And one night she was at home like trying to figure something out on the computer, and I just hear from the other room, I just found a list of every website we've ever been to, and just like, oh man, my stomach just dropped. And fortunately, I think she just didn't investigate much. But wow, you know, because that was always a thing back then, too. Like I was talking about with the family computer, families would share that computer, and you'd hear stories about like someone's dad or mom finding porn on the computer or finding their kids' web history. And I still remember this guy I went to school with. He was kind of cool, but he was also like very into like computers and way ahead of the game. And his dad found some porn history, and his dad confronted him. And his dad, I still remember this quote. His dad was like, you know, Todd, in my day, we used to sneak a Playboy here or there. These pictures I saw on the computer, this girl was spread eagle. And I just remember him telling that story in shop class. We were sitting around because we all hated shop, so we'd just like sit around and talk about computers. We don't care about woodworking. We're talking about computers. But just him telling the story. And his dad had been my first grade T-ball coach, and I liked his dad. His dad was this really nice guy. But the idea of that guy's dad like really like softly confronting him, being like, this girl was spread eagle. it was a time to be alive, you know, it was a time to be alive. So your family could potentially find that, and they could, like, restrict your internet access. You could get in serious trouble. You little monster, you little animal, looking up sex on your computer, looking up sexual stuff. So I just remember my mom finding that and, like, stomach just dropping. But to go back to the thing I was saying about, like, my friend who his mom was, like, just astonished that she has this child, and he's on the family computer. His screen is covered in these little windows of conversations. She's like, I don't know what he's talking about. And it's like, what the fuck was he talking about? What was my friend talking to that many? Like, 9 windows would fill the screen. And you could even, like, drag them. So your screen could be covered in fucking 20 tiny little windows, and you're barely able to read what people are sending you. Like, what could you possibly be saying to 20 people through your computer on a given night? But that was the norm, and you would check in with people. Like, it was just a much different time. You would have these private conversations, and yeah, you'd, like, talk to girls and stuff, but, and, like, I'm sure that some people were more aggressive with that kind of thing than others. Like, I remember, you know, certain, like, talking to certain girls on there, and they would just say, hey, how's it going? And you'd be like, good, what's up? And that was basically, like, most of it. I remember this one girl who, she was very into pop punk, and I'd kind of gone through a little bit of a punk phase, hardcore phase, and then moved on to metal, because that was really, like, underground metal was much more what I was looking for, with, like, raw music, all that, and, like, but she was, like, into pop punk, and I would kind of, like, that wasn't cool to me, and she was always really sweet and nice, and would always talk to me on AOL, and I just wasn't very nice to her. I look back on that, I'm like, what the fuck was wrong with me? Why was I such a dick, you know? But I remember girls like that and stuff, and that's a whole other thing, too, because kids still talked on the phone when I was growing up. Like I said, this didn't really start taking off until, like, mid, like, 14, 15, you know, years old. And before that, you know, in elementary school is when, like, girls, I guess, started to call boys and things like that. I didn't get too many calls from girls. I still remember it was, like, probably fifth, I think it must have been sixth grade, because that was when, like, I remember the very first, like, boy-girl parties. In seventh grade, that really started to take off. But I think sixth grade is when, like, things started to get a little more, you know, puberty was taking over. And even regardless of weird, like, I don't know, weird animal shit. It was just, like, socially there was this added pressure to start mingling boys and girls. And I remember getting this phone call from two girls, because that was the thing about, like, phone calls. It's like, you think about kids using their family phone. Like, the family computer is one thing, but it's even weird to think about these little fucking kids. And by little kids, I even mean, like, high school, like, young high school kids, like, 15 years old. But you think about elementary school kids were doing this. They would call each other and gossip and talk for hours. Like, girls would call each other and talk for fucking ever. They would call each other at night. And that's amazing, considering how afraid my generation and younger generations are of making phone calls today. Like, virtually everybody I know, like acts like they're so unique because they have anxiety about phone calls. And it's like, well, just start making more phone calls and you'll get over it. I used to have anxiety about the phone. I started making phone calls. Because I do think phone calls are essential. There's something is missing because people are not calling each other. But these little kids, they didn't give a fuck because they didn't have AOL yet. They didn't have text messages yet. They didn't have Facebook yet. So they called each other. And these two girls called me in sixth grade. It was these girls that would be, I considered very pretty. And I was like, what are they calling me for? My mom even was like, hey, Eric, there's a girl on the line. And I was just like, oh my, what? And I remember answering it, and it was these two girls, and what they were doing is they were doing a survey, and they were calling every boy in the school phone book, because they would issue these school phone books that would list all the kids and their parents' name, at least one of their parents, and their home phone number. Think about that. It's pretty amazing. And kids would use those to call each other. We had our own little phone books issued by the school, and we could use that to call each other. And they probably, maybe they still issue that, but it's probably like an email list or something that's probably accessible online. I wonder if they still give little printed phone books, these little, like, bound printed books that had information about, like, the school's administrators and all this. And then these lists of just the children and their phone numbers. It's amazing. But these girls called me, and they were going through the school phone book and calling every boy in our grade, and they were asking them, and not just like, they didn't just ask, do you have a crush on anyone? They were asking name by name. They read off the name of every single girl in my grade and asked me if I had a crush on her, one by one. And they did this, they called every boy and did this. And it was so exciting, and I answered no to every single question. Even the girls that I had crushes on, I answered no. Because it was, I mean, I'd never been asked that, you know. Nobody asked me who I had a crush on. And the fact that these two pretty girls from my class were sitting there with their phone, they each had a phone on their ear, because that's what kids would do. They'd have, like, these group calls. Like, a couple, if the family had more than one phone in their house, you know, the kids could, like, each have a phone on in that house, and you could be have these, like, weird group calls. And so these girls were asking, like, the name of every... They asked me the name of every single girl in my grade. And then what's great is at the very end of the list, they had asked the names of all the other girls, and then the last two names were their own. So they asked me at the very end if I had a crush on either one of them. And I was, like, fat, you know. I was gross. I was not, like... I was not desirable, desirable, because there were so many boys that were desirable, so many 11-year-old boys that were desirable to these girls. They were, though. I mean, you know, water finds its own level. 11-year-olds have crushes on other 11-year-olds, as absurd as it is. And then they call each other on the phone and talk about it. But just the fact that these girls, then they saved their own names for the end. And I think I did have a crush on one of those girls. I mean, they were both pretty, so I might as well have had a crush on both of them. But I said, no. Do you have a crush on me? Nah. And I got very few phone calls from girls over the years, all the way through high school. I just didn't get many. Which, you know, there's that South Park episode where it's about how Clyde is getting all the phone calls from girls, and the boys are upset about it because he's, like, he's just really popular with the girls. And it turns out it's because his dad runs a shoe store or something like that. But there's that very, like, poignant moment, because I liked when South Park got into that moment where they would have that monologue at the end where it would just break the issue down in this very real and truthful way. And I haven't watched it in years, actually. When they started doing all that election shit a couple years ago, I tuned out. There was a phase where South Park was just real, so fucking good. And this was one of those episodes, and Stan or Kyle breaks it down, and they talk about how, like, Clyde is going to have no character when he's older because he got so much you know, romantic validation at an early age that it's not, as a result, he's not going to, like, do anything to push himself forward. I don't remember how they put it, but, you know, I'm not saying that if somebody got a lot of attention from girls at an early age that they're just going to be a fucking idiot, but they did make a good point how, because so much of that, it just does a complete tangent, like, so much of that does come from a lack of romantic validation growing up, I think. So much of a desire to, like, push yourself in weird ways creatively, or, you know, in terms of humor, things like that. Because humor is very evolutionary. Christopher Hitchens wrote that very offensively titled article years back, that essay, Why Women Aren't Funny. And, of course, that he was obviously trying to be provocative with that title, as he often was. And I'm not saying I agree that women, here I am just, you know, trying to be nice, you know, I don't agree. But his overall point was, you know, because of course women are funny. I know some very funny women. But on the overall, like, pattern of human behavior, you know, men are much more aggressively funny. And the point that he makes in that article, once you get past the obviously provocative title, is that men use humor to compete to get women. And if you listen to a lot of comedians, why they got into comedy or why they started making jokes or trying to be the funny guy in their class, it's because they were insecure, unattractive, not really drawing too many women toward them, not getting too many phone calls from girls. And as a result, they felt that they had to do something to get attention from women. And as the article talks about, you know, you will often hear when a woman is describing a man that she has a crush on or a man that she has started dating, she will often say, he's so funny. But you rarely hear men say that about women they're dating, even if that woman is funny. And it just, you know, and I'm not saying that's right. You know, there's obviously social reasons for that. But I also think there is something truly on an evolutionary level that causes men to be much more aggressive in their humor. Let's put it that way. And of course, like even just broaching this topic, you know, someone could hear what I'm saying and say like, oh, he thinks women aren't funny. You know, and it's like, I'm not going to try to justify any of this. I would say that in my experience and from my experience observing the world, men are much more aggressive in terms of things like the arts, humor, even just athletic competition, because they want to impress women. So much of what men do comes from being insecure and trying to impress women. You hear it from a lot of rock stars. I remember even Lemmy from Motorhead saying he started making music because he wanted to attract girls. Obviously, he's not a conventionally attractive guy. And you'll see that again and again, where men started doing something because they wanted to attract women. Complete tangent. One thing that men didn't start doing to attract women was using AOL Instant Messenger. But it was a good way to talk to girls, you know, because people started to call each other less and less because they had this new avenue. And you think about text messaging taking over, how everybody just texts. And over the last decade, just or more, probably more than a decade, really, when you think about 2008 was a decade ago, the last 15 years, texting has just completely taken over the way that young people communicate. Everybody communicates primarily through texting. But AOL Instant Messenger was sort of the precursor to that. Girls weren't calling and doing surveys anymore through the telephone on which boys liked which girls. People were just chatting and chatting privately. And back then, you know, there weren't as many public platforms to use the internet. There were message boards. Message boards and chat rooms. And I think chat rooms were kind of overblown. You'd hear about them because it's like, oh, don't go into a chat room. That's where the pedophiles are pretending to be 13-year-old girls, and they're going to lure you. They're going to buy you a plane ticket and lure you to Maryland and chop off your, I don't know, whatever pedophiles on the internet did, you know, all of that fear. You know, chat rooms would get all this attention. Oh, you know, she met a husband in a chat room. He left his wife for a woman he met in a chat room. That was all the stuff you were hearing. It was all chat rooms. But message boards were what the public platform that I got involved with. And I'm going to at some point do just a fucking series on message boards. As someone who's interested in sociology and psychology, I would say so much of my foundation in like the new frontier of digital human communication, so much of what I've learned came from participating in and observing some different, almost said chat rooms, no, from message boards, forums. And forums have been sort of sucked away, because the interesting thing about Facebook is it sort of took what was already popular about the internet, but separate. It took the sort of social media that had, like MySpace, it took that, but it added AOL Instant Messenger, email, like shitty in, because there were in-browser games that you could play back then, like Flash games. Facebook kind of took that in, and so it basically combined all these different things. Message boards, because groups, those groups that you could make on Facebook, I don't know if people still use them, were very much like message boards. So Facebook, I think the reason why it was so successful is it basically took everything that was independently successful about the early internet and combined it into one thing. And I think that's why it's losing popularity. I don't think people really care about the security shit or the their data. What are you doing with my data? I don't think people really care about that, because I think, as my friend said, we're in a post-privacy world, and I think you see a lot less. People don't want the government to do things to them or like use their information the wrong way. They don't want certain information sold. But we've kind of accepted that we're in this post-privacy world, and part of that is by participating in these public forums. And I don't mean message boards. I don't mean those kind of online forums, but I mean these public platforms like Facebook, where we just say things and to varying degrees of public exposure. You know, you can obviously say it just to your friend list, which is still really fucking public. Just because you're limiting your posts to your friends, friends only, that's still incredibly public in a way that, say, like, my friend who had an entire screen filled with tiny instant messenger windows. He's talking to a lot of people there, but those are a bunch of private little conversations. Whereas Facebook, you know, it's like, and Twitter and all these things, it's just, you just say it and there's a feed and you see what all your friends say as they say it. And I was listening to a podcast recently where a guy was talking about how he hid all that on his Facebook feed. He hid all of the public posts so that he has to actually go to friends' pages to see what they post. And that's how MySpace was set up, where you didn't have some sort of like news feed that showed what everyone was doing as they do it. You actually had to go to their individual MySpace page to see if they had updated their page, added a new picture, added a diary entry. And that I think created less resentment, because I think this world of resentment that has developed through social media and these public platforms has come through feeling overexposed to each other, where you look at this news feed and you do it, you know, you make the decision to look at that, but yet you feel, and I don't really feel this way, but I can feel that urge to feel this way. I just kind of stop it from happening, but it's like, you see somebody saying something and you kind of resent it. You're like, how dare they say something? How dare they post something? What are they doing? You know, you see that and it's like, but you're the one looking, you know, it's that weird double bind where it's like, you're the one looking at this thing because you want to see what people are posting. And if nobody's posting anything, you're like, how come there's nothing new to look at? I'm bored. And yet when people do post things, there's this like resentment of that. And I'm not saying everybody's like that, but we do live in this overexposed alternate dimension called the internet with these public platforms that we willingly participate in, but yet they build resentment toward each other. And of course, some of that is like jealousy and just some normal human things. But there is this new resentment that I don't think has been properly, I don't know. I don't think it's really been properly diagnosed, or I don't even know what to call it. I think it's new. You think about how new ideas come about, and you know, psychology itself is new. You know, you think about like how groundbreaking Freud was. You know, like before him, there was very little development in the psychological and psychiatric fields. I'm not like Tom Cruise, and I don't know the whole history. There's a nostalgic reference. I don't know the whole history of psychiatry like Tom Cruise does. I love Tom Cruise, by the way. If I'm going to do an episode about message boards, I'm going to do an episode someday about Tom Cruise. I'm a genuine fan. how's this for just random ideas today? Tom Cruise has got me going off in all sorts of different directions. You just think about how new the idea of psychiatry and psychology is, and we take it for granted now. We throw these terms out. We're all psychological experts, but there are so many new ideas that developed that we didn't have a way to verbalize. And if you don't have a way to verbalize something, it might exist, like the feeling, the essence of it might exist, but if it hasn't been properly described and, you know, categorized yet, it doesn't really impact our lives in the same way. So as, you know, something like human psychology has become, you know, mainstream, we now talk about things like, oh, that person's depressed, that's a mental illness, that's this, that's that. And we kind of take that for granted. And I think we're at a stage right now where we're going to be coming up with some new ideas to talk about the way that technology has impacted us. And I don't think that we're there yet. I don't think we really have a way to verbalize it. And I think it's going to take someone mapping out the entire trajectory of something like the internet, like, because I don't hear people talk about AOL Instant Messenger. I don't see people talk about the early days of that phenomenon, and message boards. I don't hear very many people talk about message boards anymore. And I still use some. There's still some that I participate in that have managed to survive through the times, just because it makes more sense for them to exist in that format, that admittedly outdated format, than it does for them to be like co-opted by social media and that kind of thing. One of them is an organized crime discussion group that's been around in different incarnations forever. How's that for nerdy? But Yeah, it's. I don't think that we have a way to really verbalize or really fully wrap our brains around what has happened and what is happening. And I think that that kind of the resentment that has come through this overexposure to each other, and this weird double bind we're in, where we're like just so curious, we're addicted to each other. We get online not to read random things. Do you think about like how many people just spend their free time reading Wikipedia? I know there's, you know, sometimes I'll go on tangents where I'll just spend the entire night reading Wikipedia articles, and like Wikipedia's come up in the world. It's a lot more reputable than it was, you know, when anybody could edit it and it had garbage. It's become a lot. It's not perfect. There's a lot wrong with it still. There's a lot of misinformation still on there. But for a lot of it, it has a lot of really good basic information that we don't utilize. We have greater access to more information through Wikipedia than we ever could have imagined, but I don't feel like we utilize it. Instead, people get on and they want to see what other people did because we're so focused on people. We're addicted to each other. We're an organism and we cling to each other and we resent each other and we love each other and we do all these things. But ultimately, social media is what kind of pushed everything. Social media is the reason people use the internet so much. Yeah, people would use it for work, for email, for this and that. But if things like Facebook hadn't developed, and earlier AOL Instant Messenger, because I can guarantee you all those kids who were sitting on AOL Instant Messenger every night in the late 90s and early 2000s would not have been sitting there cruising the internet. A lot of them would not have been cruising the internet if they couldn't be talking to their peers. And once again, we go full circle, because what the fuck were they talking about? Were they gossiping? What was I talking about with people? There were people I even had common interests with, but we weren't even necessarily talking about our common interests. What the fuck was I talking to someone about? I remember talking about life. I remember talking about probably some of these things. I do remember having some really interesting conversations with certain people, you know, as our minds were developing. But still, like, what the fuck were we talking about every night, almost every night, that kind of thing. But either way, we were on there. I mean, I would have been on the internet anyway. I was like a fucking nerd. I would have been reading about pro wrestling and video games on random websites and stuff like that, going to message boards, even if there was no instant messenger. But I know that a lot of people were on there solely because they could talk to their peers, because they could fill the entire screen up with windows and say, hey, how's it going? What's up? Sup? That's what a lot of people would say. Sup? Nothing much. You, there'd be those people too. I mean, this is disjointed, but there'd be those people who would message you and they'd say, sup? And you'd go, not much. What about you? Not much. And then that would be it. You wouldn't talk to each other the rest of the time. Or if they were a real weirdo, they would, like, you wouldn't talk to each other after that. But then they would say, gotta go, like an hour later, see ya. And let's just go on a tangent about just random instant messenger things. Because AOL Instant Messenger, on AOL you had the profile, which was like associated with your actual AOL service provider account. And you could like, and it had all these categories like name, you know, interest, this and that, like kind of the standard profile that you would see back then, like just a basic, my name's Eric and these are my hobbies and interests and here's a funny quote. But the interesting thing about it, the Instant Messenger program, this is before nothing was called an app then. That didn't come about till phones. And now even computers use the term app, which is fucking stupid. They're programs, man. They're fucking programs. Services and programs. Apps are for phones. The interesting thing about AOL Instant Messenger was you could have this like weird little custom profile, and there were no like prompts. It was just a totally blank space, and you could colorize it. You could put links in there, and then you could also do the away message, and there was this away message, and it meant you were, duh, away from your computer. But there'd be somebody who would be online all the time, but they would always have their away message up, even if they were there. It was almost like some sort of like, I'm cool. My away message is up. I'm away. But they were always there, and you knew they were always there. And despite whatever the fuck you're thinking, I was not that person. I totally would fit the profile of the person who would be on AOL Instant Messenger all day and night, but have his away message up 24/7, but I was not that person somehow. But that was something that certain people did, whether it was out of laziness. But I don't think it was. I think it was almost like putting your hand up, being like, don't talk to me. It's like a weird like supply and demand thing. Like, I'm going to make you think I'm not around because it's going to make you want to talk to me more. AOL Instant Messenger psychology. This is one of the only places you'll hear that. AOL Instant Messenger psychology. I was talking about the development of, you know, the field of psychology and Freud and all of this in the last couple hundred years. Hundred years? I don't know when Freud's. I don't know his exact years, but it wasn't that long ago. And, you know, things have gotten to a point now where I'm talking about AOL Instant Messenger psychology. You had these different quirks, people's quirks played out. And it was a much more private world, though. And now we entered this public world. And that was the thing, too, back then, because I was talking about screen names, and I was Blocker Leo. And if you went on message boards, even though it was this public platform, message boards were very public. Anybody could read what you were posting. You did so under a screen name. I don't remember anybody on any single message board I ever went to. And I participated in a number of them. Might as well just sound as dorky as I possibly can if I'm talking about this. Participated in forums. But I participated and observed. There were some that I just observed. I don't remember a single fucking forum over the years. A single fucking forum where anybody used their real name. Yeah, you would eventually get to know people if you used them. You'd find out people would use their first names, things like that. But nobody like registered under, I wasn't Eric Stonefell on any message board. And you'd come up with creative names, whatever, you know, Blocker Leo 420. Where am I going with that? But the thing you used to hear a lot with that early internet was, anybody can just say anything anonymously. They're a bunch of keyboard warriors. You got these keyboard warriors out there, and they won't say it to your face. Oh, come say it to my face. Come say it to my face. You're typing under a name, a screen name. You know, that was kind of the big argument against the internet, because there were a lot of shit talkers. There were a lot of really mean people, a lot of toxic people using the internet early on. And you think about teenagers using it. Of course teenagers are going to anonymously hate. Of course they are. Jesus. And a lot of other people too, but especially teenage boys on the early internet were just vicious. It was vicious. And the argument was always, though, like, you're doing it anonymously. Well, it turns out, we flash forward to this public platform world, the Facebook world, all of that, and people are still nasty in a slightly different way. A less funny way. That's the thing, is because the meanness and viciousness of the early internet, it was almost always rooted in some sort of humor. And it was, in my opinion, genuinely funny a lot of the time. It could be mean, and people would get upset. And, like, you know, at this point in my life, I value niceness and basic human kindness more than ever. But I have to say, it's like, you know, when it comes to, like, growing up, I mean, like, a certain amount of harshness is necessary to form your character. Almost like I was saying, like, if you get too much romantic validation early in life, you know, it can be damaging to your character. I'd say the same thing is true for, like, if you don't experience enough, like, not cruelty, but, like, if you don't get, like, harassed a little bit. Harassed. I think a little bit of harassment, whether it's from your friends, especially from your friends, I think that's one of the core things. Like, most of the shit I dealt with growing up was from my friends, and not in that, like, bro kind of way. Some of it was really sinister and mean-spirited, and it came from some of my best friends. And I saw it in other groups of friends, too. I didn't see a lot of bullying between different groups of people. Like, I didn't see the jocks bullying the nerds. Yeah, like, some people could be mean to each other here and there. And there was, when you think about junior high especially, more than high school, there was an overall climate of unhappiness and meanness among everybody. But most of it was contained within friend groups. Friends just being catty and with men in particular, men were very catty in a way that I don't see people talk about much. Like, even just because I played football and stuff, so I was friends with some jock type guys, but I was also friends with, like, the skateboarder dudes that I generally hung out with and things like that. There's the jocks, there's the goths, there's the rockers. You know, it's funny, all those, like, categories that people talk about. But, you know, even within like the macho people I knew, there was a lot of cattiness. But then so of course, you think about young men using the internet at that point anonymously, of course they're going to be vicious. But the difference is with the public platforms today, there's still this viciousness, but it's much more, it's less funny. It's much more just kind of like, I don't even know how to really talk about it yet. It's one of those things like I was talking about with the resentment, with this new age of overexposure to each other and the resentment that comes from that. It's kind of, I don't really have the words to describe the particular form of negativity that I see play out publicly, but I think a great example, you know, that counteracts the whole, of course you can say that, you're anonymous, of course you can be a dick, you're anonymous on the internet. I remember seeing the local newspaper here had to disable its comments because they were always so nasty, and they were done under people's names because you had to comment with your Facebook account. So it would list that person's full name, and they would be saying something hateful about like homeless people, or say something controversial happened in town, and you'd look and there'd be these just hateful comments from different, not just one group or another. It'd be, you know, often politically charged hate from all kinds of people, both sides, everything in between. And I think of the internet kind of like a car, where someone gets in a car and something changes. There's this buffer between them and the reality they'd experience if they were face to face with somebody, but you can still see them. I think like when I see somebody in a car who's angry, they really remind me of that Tex Avery wolf cartoon from way back when, the wolf who gets in his car and he's parallel parking and he rams the car in front of him and he rams the car behind him, and he just looks so like scary and ferocious, and he's driving around and it's just road rage. And that's how people look to me. They really, no exaggeration, no caricature, nothing. That's how people look to me when they're mad in their cars. And there's a lot of people who are mad in their cars. They're impatient if someone doesn't turn right away. And this, it pisses me off too when it's a green arrow and the person takes their sweet time to turn. You know, it's like, hey, we got a limited window here. Be conscientious. Be safe, but be conscientious. Fucking go. But people get pissed off so easily and so quickly. And the things they'll do in their car, the way they'll treat each other, giving each other the finger, the level of just outward and aggressive anger they will show to another person, not knowing if somebody they know is watching them right now. Like somebody they work with could be like one car over watching this person they know who's otherwise a mild-mannered person like flip their fucking lid. They could be watching that person just lose it in this embarrassing way, because anger truly is embarrassing. And so you'll see people in cars do that. And, you know, when I see somebody too, like in the driver's seat, that might as well be their fucking profile picture. You know, that might as well just be their profile picture. And then you go to the internet, that needed to be said twice, by the way. but then you'll go on the internet and you'll see somebody, you know, just being awful, and they have a profile picture up and it's their face and it's their name and they're being that way. And you can see them. And instead of being inside of a car, they are in a different form of technology. They're inside of the internet. They actually are inside of the internet. They've created this persona, this form of themselves. It's you know, a different dimension within our current dimension that you can enter. They created a Facebook profile. They got in their car. It's the same thing, and it transforms them a little bit in some way. But I think all of that's interesting because I think it shows that anonymity wasn't the reason why people were so nasty on the internet. Sure, there's, you know, it's there's a buffer. Whenever there's a buffer, humans will use that as an excuse to be worse. And I try not to think the worst of people. I try not to go on weird misanthropic tangents. And I think I've done well as someone who's naturally has a tendency to judge people and criticize people and be mad at people. I've done a good job at not being a misanthrope lately. But at the same time, it's like that's something I see in people, where when people have a buffer, they will use that to their to the full extent that they can to be nasty. And not everybody, but certain people. And they do it when they're in cars and they do it when they're online. And I think that's why those two environments create sort of a toxic atmosphere and why those two things can ruin your day. It's why so many studies show that social media has a negative effect on your mental health. It's because you're exposed to that sort of vibe, if nothing else. Even if it's not a specific incident that you're seeing, even if nobody's attacking you, you're exposed to a certain vibe from certain people. It's that overexposure. And I'd be curious, you know, what the studies say for the effect of driving on your mental health. While, you know, driving on a big open country road with your music playing on a nice day is great for your mental health. And if that's what driving was, I would just be like, driving is the most amazing fucking thing in the world. But the reality is, driving is often being stuck in traffic, surrounded by Tex Avery wolves, plural, who are just snarling and just vicious, and you're overexposed to them, even just driving to the store, down the street, and that can really just change your entire fucking outlook on the day. And it's the same thing. You hop on social media, you see the wrong thing, or the wrong vibe from the wrong person, and that just changes your entire outlook on the day. So, you know, cars and the internet, the public aspects of those two things really have an impact on mental health. So maybe we were better off with AOL Instant Messenger having 9 tiny windows open on your screen saying, "Sup, not much, you? Gotta go, see ya." Maybe that was better for our mental health. I don't know, but AOL Instant Messenger was canceled. You can't even get it anymore. You can't even get it anymore. So we have to move on.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me. And walk this lovely land with me.